Hi.
Hi.
I'm Evan.
I'm Addie.
And you're listening to the Speaking English Podcast, the place to be for anyone who wants to watch more movies or read more books but doesn't quite know where to start. Welcome to episode 175. Tis the season. We're celebrating Noirvember this week with a double feature of old-fashioned yarns. We watched for today Double Indemnity, 1944, directed by Billy Wilder, and In a Lonely Place, 1950, directed by Nicholas Ray, two staples of the genre, I think. And I had actually already seen these two, but wanted to revisit them. Our goal is to find a classic noir that Addie likes. So we last year we watched The Big Sleep, which I thought was great, but it didn't quite hit the mark for Addie. So we want to see if it's a her problem, or or if it's a noir problem.
Yeah.
So you had to watch two of the big hitters for today. And
yes, sure, I looked at the Letterboxd reviews for these two that we watched for today. People love these ones. So if I didn't like these two, it would have been a me problem for sure.
Yeah.
I did like them.
So we'll get into that in just a second. But before that, how has your week been?
Honestly, really bad. Uh-oh. I went to my dad's house for Thanksgiving. I got there on Tuesday evening, and then we skied on Wednesday. That was actually really fun. And then the wee hours of Thursday morning, Thanksgiving morning, my entire family woke up with a horrible stomach flu at like 3 a.m, like all at once. Everybody throwing up. I have a huge family, so that was so crazy.
So that's a lot of people throwing up.
It's a lot of people throwing up. And it was awful. That's just how we spent the entirety of Thanksgiving and the next day, just being really ill, nobody eating anything, everyone feeling really bad. And then I came home. So it was really kind of a bummer. It was really nice to see my family, though. And like the one day that everyone was healthy was really, really fun and really nice. Yeah. And it's been a nice weekend now, just at home. But that's just really it. It feels like my Thanksgiving break like did not happen at all, to be honest. Like I have to do school stuff today, and I'm like, how the hell did this happen to me? Where did my break
how
go?
How did we get here?
Yeah.
Where did we go wrong?
Yeah.
I see.
That's really like, I love having a big family, but this is not the first time that something like this has happened. Like it's just really, if one person gets sick, everyone gets it, you know, it just spreads so rapidly and it's just
like
so
wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially having like a baby in the house. Like she just, it's a little walking Petri dish.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. So yeah. How was your week?
I gotcha. Yeah. I didn't really have a Thanksgiving break to be ruined, so it couldn't have been ruined. I did go to a friend's house for a little Thanksgiving celebration.
Nice.
I kind of crashed. I mean, I was invited, but I felt like I was kind of crashed. Like I was only one of these people that I actually knew. But it was very fun. I had a good time, and everyone was welcoming to me. So that was actually really fun. I ate really good also.
Nice.
Because either if I eat good, I either have to pay for it, or if I'm cooking for myself, I don't eat that good. I'll just cook something very simple. Yeah. So it was nice to eat lots of good food and not have to pay any money.
That is always so nice.
And share in good times as well. So yeah, it was a pretty good Thanksgiving. The rest of the weekend was less good. Today I'm riding a high because on Mondays I have my group of tag kids that I work with. Mm-hmm. And every day we do the Wordle, or every nice. Like session we do the Wordle, and I got it on the second try. Do you do the Wordle like every day? Because I know some
not every day, most days. I haven't done it today.
the one today is, can I tell you what it is?
Sure, go ahead.
Or do you want to do it?
No, you can tell me. I'll get it in one.
Okay, so the word was tawny.
Oh.
T-A-W-N-Y. And I just guessed it. Yeah. I forget. I think the first word that we guessed was, I think, treat. No. Something with a W. I don't know. It was W, A, and T were somewhere.
Okay.
And then I was like, you know what? You know what word I can think of that has those three letters? And that was just it. And I was like,
okay. I absolutely would not have gotten that in two. Congratulations.
I was like, yo, this is incredible. But I felt kind of bad because I really stole the thunder from the kiddos. But
yeah,
they said they wouldn't have gotten it. Like, so they didn't know what that word was. So I was like,
yeah,
what am I going to do? You know,
that's really funny.
I'm really getting, I don't know if restless is the right word, but I'm ready to come home for a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll see. So, I'll be in the States from the 23rd to the 2nd.
Okay, nice.
So, although I have a long weekend, two weekends from now, like a really long weekend.
Oh, that's really nice.
And I need to find plan something to do then, because if I just stay at home, I'll regret it. So,
yeah.
I got to figure something out for that weekend, and then it's smooth sailing from then on out.
Very nice.
Yeah. So that's what's been up. And I've been watching lots of movies and football. Mm. And yeah. Oh, actually, before we get into it, we had a mailbag submission.
Oh my gosh. It's from Aubrey, for sure.
It was from Aubrey. Yeah. Okay. A movie adaptation of Eileen by Otessa Moshfegh is going to be released in December. Have you read the book, and will you be watching the movie?
I'm so glad she brought this up because I just learned about this last night, and I was going to ask you if you saw the trailer.
Oh, there's a trailer. No, I
didn't. Yes, it stars Thomasin McKenzie as Eileen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a good casting.
I think so, too. And Anne Hathaway is Rebecca. And it looks great. And I'm like so excited about it.
Nice.
But I didn't know about it at all. Like I learned about it because it was kind of offhandedly mentioned in like a TikTok that I saw. And I was like, they're making a movie out of Eileen. And then I learned that the trailer was already out. It's been out for like a month. And so I'm really shocked by how like little, I don't know, promotion
how getting. Under the radar.
It's coming out pretty soon. Oh, wow. But I think it'll be a really fun watch. I really like Thomasin McKenzie. I really liked that book. I think it would make a good movie. So I'm excited.
That's super exciting. We have read it. In fact, we read it for book club. It was our second ever book club book.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a fun read.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. I wonder how they're going to make it into a movie.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see where it goes with this one. But yeah, that's super exciting.
Yeah, you got to watch the trailer and let me know what you think. I think it looks pretty fun.
I think that's her first book, right?
Her first like full novel. Let me check. I feel like her first ever published thing was McGlue.
Oh, it looks like it's been out at festivals already because there's a good amount of people on Letterboxd that have seen it.
What do they think?
Good.
Okay.
It has an average of 3.4. So like,
oh, that's okay.
not groundbreaking, but good.
Yeah. Eileen,
I think looks about right.
Okay. Eileen was published in 2015. The first thing that she published was McGlue in 2014, but that's like a short story.
Oh, okay.
Or a novella, as they say.
I see. In Spanish, novella is just novel, so that confuses me from time to time. Cool. Yeah, we'll be sure to check it out, maybe even watch it when it comes out wide release. Yeah. But if it does here, there's a good chance it won't.
Okay.
It's so weird what they show here and what they don't.
It's funny.
because Hunger Games was a huge deal.
Oh, interesting. But, I kind of want to read all the Hunger Games again, but I don't know if that's really going to happen.
Is the new Hunger Games movie also a book?
Yes.
Okay.
A prequel.
I see. I didn't know if they just kind of decided to cash in on the franchise or if it was...
songbirds and snakes. I think it sounds fun and cool, but I hate how many fantasy novels fall into this trap of like making the book title the blank of blank and blank. It's like every single fantasy series has at least one book called that, but some of them will be like the whole series, like A Court of Thorns and Roses or whatever. The Song of Ice and Fire. It pisses me off. I don't know who did it first, but it needs to be put to an end.
This is the episode of Indemnity and Place.
Yeah. And Place.
That's crazy.
That's funny.
And on that note, time to get into the noir pictures of the day.
Which show first?
I think I watched Double Indemnity first, and I think we both did.
Yep.
Because you seemed very excited to watch this one.
Yes.
In comparison. So basically, I picked these two because I think that they kind of hit a lot of the staples of noir. And this is a brilliant idea that I came across that I can't wait to share. Is that I feel like classic noir is like a book of like a short story collection.
Okay.
You know, each one you put on and it's falls in like the same category. So it's like when we read The October Country, you know, you know roughly what you're going to like the vibe and what you're getting from each story, but you can still be surprised by some of the stuff that comes up.
Yeah.
I feel like classic noir is kind of the same thing. And especially specifically classic noir, like the original era, because they all feel like short stories. There's nothing ever that's too expansive. It's usually a simple story that just, if it's done well, just kind of has something, some special something that makes it stand out, I guess. And so every time I put on a classic noir, it feels like, you know, picking out a short story from this collection.
Totally.
And so these are two of the ones that stood out maybe the most to me as being unique or interesting. And I think Double Indemnity, let's start there, because I think that this set the tone for a lot of what came after. It set a lot of precedents from the voiceover narration, maybe. This one is based in story. But I think that's a common trait that comes up a lot. And I don't know, other tropes that either were already common or became common. So I think Double Indemnity is really a good staple example of what the story can do, or what this genre can do. So
gotcha.
I think maybe let's start there.
Okay.
This is directed by Billy Wilder, co-written by him and Raymond Chandler, if I'm not mistaken, based off of a James Cain novel. So this hard-boiled fiction that a lot of these stories are based on, Raymond Chandler was one of these authors that was often pulled from. And many of these guys also moved to Hollywood. And so I think a lot of the memorable lines might be a little bit from his wheelhouse. But yeah, okay. Raymond Chandler helped write this based off of a James Cain story. So what did you think about this one?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was nice. Good.
Incredible news.
I really loved, I can't remember like what it is that you said about this movie that made me think I was going to like it so much. Maybe we're talking about like the dialogue, or maybe you're talking about like the female lead and how she's evil. But both of those things did it for me a lot. I really liked how like witty and flirty the two main characters are with each other. And I love their kind of strange relationship that starts immediately, even though the woman is married. I just thought that like, I don't know, made a really fun dynamic. I liked how fast they kind of like trusted each other, I guess, or he trusted her despite her being evil and just got on board with this murderous plot immediately. Like, took very little convincing. I thought that was kind of funny and interesting. And yeah, I like how evil and kind of, I don't know the right word for it, like alluring she is, maybe. She's just such an interesting, compelling character. So that made this one stand out to me, I guess. I think that maybe some of the classic noirs that we've watched before didn't always do it for me because the characters start to all feel like each other, you know, like it just, I don't know. None of them became all that memorable to me in noirs of the past that we've watched. But this one feels very different. Both like the two leads, the male and the female lead, were both very memorable and intriguing to me as like individual characters. And then also their dynamic together. So that kind of made it feel extra special in my mind.
And I thought that the narration, some of the lines are so classic. So I did it for money and a girl. I didn't get the money. And that long pause it takes. Yeah. I didn't get the girl.
I love it. Yeah, I love that it's all being told, like, kind of in this, like, phone message. It's so funny. It's so interesting.
Just some of these turns of phrases. I think that, like, this one does a really good job at kind of building this world, maybe.
I agree with that.
And setting you firmly in it, where it's you... At least in my case, when I'm watching movies such as this, I buy into kind of the over the top nature of it because I think it's a different but shared world. I think that all of these inhabit, and that's kind of what I was talking about with the short stories. So I'm pleased to see where they go with some of the.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because. That it works for me sometimes and it really doesn't work for me other times. And I'm having a really hard time like trying to distinguish when it does and doesn't work. Like this one I really liked. The Big Sleep, I didn't for the same reason. Like I didn't like that one because it felt like, or actually maybe I'm not thinking of The Big Sleep. I can't remember. But even in A Lonely Place, some of the same types of noir like phrases that they used was like such an eye roll to me. Like I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but in that one when he's like, I was born when she kissed me, and they say it so many times, I'm like, shut up. I don't like it when you guys talk like this. But for some reason the same type of lingo language like worked for me in Double Indemnity, and I really can't say why.
It's Humphrey Bogart. You just don't like Humphrey Bogart.
I just don't like him. serious beef with Humphrey Bogart.
That's so funny. I mean, I kind of see what you mean, but like that's the line that everyone likes from that movie, and it's just I feel like in the actual movie they only say it in two different scenes.
Yeah, but
everyone that writes or talks about this movie like mentions that line. So
I knew it was gonna be that way too. I didn't look at any reviews for that one before I saw it. And as soon as they said that line, I was like, I can already see in my mind Letterboxd reviews that begin with that line in italics and then get into the review and it's going to piss me off. And I was, that's exactly what it's like.
I think it's a good line though, because it comes from a screenwriter. Like it's taken into, we'll talk more about that one in a second. Cause I think that one's doing some other.
Yeah. But different I don't know. Things. Something about this one, and the dialogue of this, I just thought was a little less serious and like, and that just makes it more fun and convincing to me. I don't know, like being on the phone and I don't know, the whole line of like, I didn't get the money and I did get the girl. I was like, I love that. What a great way to start this. Yeah. I think that's so fun. Something about it is, it's just taking itself a little bit less seriously and
It might actually come from the narration. I think at the heart of it, noir is as a genre is kind of, I really like the word yarns, little yarns about doomed men and the women that associate with them.
Right.
And I think when it's in that direct address, when you have this doomed man who has given up in some ways and is telling a story like from the future, mm-hmm. It works really well at kind of poking at the things that happened or didn't happen.
Yeah.
And why that is, because I'm thinking of another one called Detour, which is really like low budget, kind of pared back, but does the same thing, and is set as it's just a voiceover, like in his head. We get the man thinking, and then recounting the events to just to us, the viewer.
Gotcha.
But it's kind of the same way. And I think when you do that, when you're having the character's own perspective on things, then it shades in a little more.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Keys and that relationship?
Which one's Keys?
The Edward G. Robinson guy who figures it all out. The crack insurance man.
I loved that. I really loved that he was just so smart and kind of like respected for being so smart. And I love like the way that he talks about having his like his inner monologue, his intuition is just that good. He's like, I've been sitting with this intuition for 25 years or however long. He's never been wrong. I love that. I really love a character that's like, I don't know, they just got to figure it out. Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I think that like the dynamic between what's his name, Neff and Keys makes like is different within this one, because it's not the opponent or the person he's trying to get away from,
right,
is also like a very close friend, and I think that the friction from that adds a whole element, a whole dynamic, because. He knows what he's going to think of, and he almost gets away with it because of that. But then it's like more of a betrayal too. It's not just a man kind of turning his back on his job and his life. It's choosing this girl over his best friend.
Ah, so true.
And I think there's a lot said about the last shot of this movie, where it's a callback to an earlier scene where he says, I love you too, because, and then he lights his own. The whole movie, you have other people lighting. What an end. Billy Wilder just makes the best endings. You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, more insurance. We also saw Billy Wilder take on insurance in The Apartment, which is one of my favorite movies.
True, ever. Yeah.
But it was, I guess, something that stood out to me on this viewing. So I've seen this one, I think this is either the third or fourth time. Okay. So I know this one pretty well by now.
Okay.
And something on this viewing that stood out to me was how much they're just talking about insurance.
Yeah, for but real. Like, it
works. It doesn't make me bored, really.
Yeah.
I don't know if you felt the same way. Okay.
I did. I like being fully aware of the plot and like all of the different kind of clauses and loopholes and stuff that they have to jump through to make their scheme work out like to the fullest extent. Mm-hmm. I like knowing those kinds of rules and like the trickery that they're going to use to be able to like work within the system. I think that's fun. And I think this movie did a good job of that.
Nice. Yeah. Double indemnity. They had to be greedy and go for double the money.
I know.
They definitely could get away with it.
One thing that irked me about this movie was how often Neff said baby.
Oh, I was gonna ask about that. Yeah.
It's like, okay, relax.
We get it, tough guy.
But I was willing to overlook it.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of wondering about that. What you would think of that.
Yeah, so much of noir's like the things about noir's that irk me come down to things like that. Like just little like the characters just irritate me. Their mannerisms, their like overall just vibe, I guess. And that was one of those things. I was like, I just don't like the way that you guys talk in these movies very much.
But I'm glad that you like the kind of dialogue and back and forth. There's that one scene where he's talking about like speeding. And suppose.
I know. I actually really liked that. I thought it was really funny.
I think the subtext in that makes it work, I guess.
I think so too, yeah. The two like leads, they had really good chemistry too.
Mm. I loved how he lit his matches.
Yeah. He is cool. He's way cooler than Humphrey Bogart.
Hot take. Well, it's so Fred McMurray was a wholesome kind of guy. Mm. And the only two times he played like kind of these shadier characters were for Billy Wilder in this one and The Apartment.
That's so funny. I didn't know that.
Because he's the big guy in that one, you know?
Yeah.
And that's further down the line, so he's a little older. But yeah, those are like kind of pretty much the two times, because he called My Three Sons. Uh-huh. But it was like a family friendly sitcom, and that was what he was best known for, apparently, according to my dad. That's where he knew him from.
So interesting.
But yeah, so like it's kind of playing against type, and I think it works really well in both cases. And he's believable as a doomed man who turned wrong, who had his
head really is turned. It's cool that that Billy Wilder like saw that potential in him, even though he had done a role like that before, because he did a really great job.
Yeah, it feels very believable, and I think that's a common thing in movies such as this, where you have your protagonist who it's almost like a Greek tragedy. They have some fatal flaw that leads them astray, and you're like, well, I'm rooting for them, but I kind of see that this has to go this way, and that's tough, but there you have it.
Very true.
Yeah. Do you have a rating for Double Indemnity? Or did you? Is there anything else you wanted to specifically talk about?
I guess just like along the lines of the main character being so believable at first, when he just gets on board with the murder plot immediately, I was like, I think I'm not going to like this movie, because it just kind of irritates me how easily he was convinced to kill somebody. Mm. But the longer it went on, the more I was like, it just kind of worked. And I don't really know why, but maybe it's just something about his portrayal of this character. But I was like, yeah, I don't know. I just believe now that he would do that.
Nice. There's a line of something like murder smells like honeysuckle or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't bother me as much as I thought it would at first. So I think I gave this one a 9 out of 10. I really liked it.
Nice. It's a 9 out of 10 for me as well.
It was very special. A real standout noir in my eyes.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering if I would bump it up to a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I didn't.
Yeah.
It was very polished and very good. But I don't know what it takes to make something a 10 out of 10 for me. But it was maybe almost like too well oiled.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think it's one of the most well seen, one of the most seen and well regarded for a reason.
Gotcha.
And that is because it is very good.
I'm really glad to have seen it now.
All right. So maybe let's move on to In a Lonely Place. This one I watched last night.
Me too. And I watched it with, I made Adam watch it with me. And like in the very first scene, Adam's like, I love a brooding man driving a car. And I was like, welcome to the wonderful world of film noir, dude.
Yeah.
And I love this whole movie.
Doomed men and the women they associate with. So 1950, Nicholas Ray in a lonely place. Humphrey Bogart was old by this point. This is older. This is 4 years after The Big Sleep. And I was reading in some of the things that he kind of stopped being as good shortly after.
Oh, interesting.
Well, as far as like his health took a turn.
Right. Humphrey.
Follows Humphrey Bogart as Dick Steele, a screenwriter who's between jobs, who hangs out in kind of this lower class of celebrity, the D-list celebrities and forgotten people from Hollywood, and stumbles upon a murder plot while also falling in love, while also being born when she met me. Died when she left me. Lived a few weeks when she knew me. I don't know. I think that line is great, but
do you?
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't like it.
I mean, maybe a little cheesy, but you gotta be romantic about some stuff. I just to see it as like a different world. The world of film noir, where as aggrandizing as you can be, the better. The more aggrandizing you can be, the better. but yeah, what were your overall thoughts with this one? Did you like it overall?
I did. I liked it overall. I didn't like it as much as Double Indemnity, but I'm kind of intrigued about not liking it as much as Double Indemnity because the concept of this one is more interesting to me than the concept of Double Indemnity. Like this whole plot line of like falling in love with this person who you think in the back of your mind might have killed somebody. Like, how long are you going to let that go on? Like, how far are they going to push it? How much can you trust them? That is so interesting. I'm so glad that this movie exists because that's just such a thrilling story. And then the way that it kind of concludes too, where ultimately it doesn't even matter whether he killed this person or not because he's a violent, aggressive guy. That's all there is to it. Like, it's really just a matter of time. And that's so compelling. I really, really love that. But something about this one was not quite as interesting to watch to me the whole way through. It kind of, there were some long scenes of a lot of dialogue that I was like, just kind of bored, honestly. And I did not buy into the relationship of the two main characters nearly as much as I did in Double Indemnity.
Mm. It did come together kind of quick, but I don't know. Yeah. I think that Humphrey Bogart's performance in this one is so interesting because the character of Dick Steele is just such an enigma. Like,
For real.
Because if you look at it on paper, like he has beat up multiple people causing serious harm.
Yeah. Over nothing.
But everyone still seems to like him. And I found myself rooting for him up until a certain point, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's done well how that's portrayed. Mm-hmm. Because once you start identifying less with him and more with Gloria Graham, I forget her character's name right now.
Laurel.
Yeah. Then it kind of switches. And I thought that was interesting. But I just think what an interesting character, and the portrayal leaves you guessing a good amount.
Yeah, I liked how much it left you guessing. It honestly reminded me a little bit of Carrie in that way. Like the whole movie, I was so back and forth. Like, oh my God, is this guy evil? Did he kill someone? I don't know. And that's fun. Like, I don't know. I really like that type of thing. And then like the sort of story it tells in the end also reminded me of Black Christmas.
Okay.
It's also just kind of like, it just doesn't even matter who the killer is. All of these men are bad.
Yeah.
Aggressive.
Yeah. I like how you put that about Black Christmas. Because I think, well, the last line is that like, this would have meant so much to us yesterday or whatever. But that,
I didn't like when she said that.
Yeah. There was something that pushed that I like that a lot better. This is only the second time I watched this one.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've said it on here, but I used to say this all the time that like after two watches, I feel like I've seen something, like I've seen it enough to like, to comment on it and to understand it more. I think the second viewing is just as important as the first. But the first time I watched that line was like, that's crazy. Cause you know, we find out the information we're waiting for, but it's too late and it's like a race against time. But when I'm thinking about it now, it's really, it's the only thing that's different is that Dix probably doesn't have the capacity to kill someone in that way, but that doesn't change any of the fact that he can fly into these fits of violence.
Seriously.
And do crazy stuff.
Like, yeah. When he was beating up that driver, the football player, like he picks up a rock. Like he really might have killed that guy had Laurel not been right there. That's insane. Yeah. When that happened, I was like, no way. That was really shocking.
Yeah. But then you still have these things where he like, he money ordered him $300, like money, yeah, transferred him $300 after because he felt bad about it. Like, I don't think that he's a bad person. I think he has like PTSD. And
yeah.
And it's like, but some of the lines do, like regarding that, do feel a little iffy, where the other guy's like, that's just part of him, you know? He's gonna,
I know,
he's a, you gotta, he's
dynamite take or whatever. Yeah. I was like, whoa, no.
Like, is that like that? That's probably not an expectation that we should be having.
But, no, not at all.
But for me, that created an interesting dynamic because as long as you're, identifying, you know, you feel bad for him because you see that how he can't live a normal regular life because he has these problems. Mm-hmm. And when he finds someone that he really likes, he doesn't want to lose it, and it gets to a point where he becomes this dangerous person.
Mm-hmm.
So I found there to be like so much tension in these scenes towards the end where he does feel like a fuse that's going to go off. Mm-hmm. And just like seeing it in what ways or whatnot. So I found that the dynamic to be super interesting, but
I agree.
I thought the beginning of this was also like when they meet each other,
mm-hmm.
and just his original interrogation,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it worked so well for me because it's like, what is this? Who is this guy? What's going on here?
Totally.
Where are his motivations really? And just totally. Kind of the way that it worked out, what I thought was super engaging.
I agree. It was really interesting. And it, like you were saying earlier, I like the whole intrigue of his character in general. Like, and I like how clear that's made in the movie. I like how Laurel is like, I like his face. Like something about him just interests me. I like that she, I don't know, says that out loud, like kind of admits that to herself and to him. It's, I don't know, it's just an interesting way to look at this type of person, I guess.
Yeah. Then she gets involved.
Yeah.
She associates with him, and that's where that's where we get our story. I thought it was super interesting the way that it kind of played with these conventions of like movies and filmmaking. The scene towards the end that goes crazy, the grapefruit scene.
Yeah.
Where he says, you know, you don't, he's talking about writing a love scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, anyone could tell that we're in love. And that's not the vibe that you get at all. I just thought
right.
the way that that's written and the way it's portrayed is so, so interesting. Like it cuts it something more, you know, like, yeah, and totally. that's the way that stands out. The one that stands out the most to me, but I think there are other places in this where this kind of highlights the idea of, you know, being a writer, writing for pictures and being in a picture.
Totally.
And it's funny, I was kind of realizing that these two movies that we watched, if you combine them together, you get Sunset Boulevard, which is Billy Wilder's movie that also came out in 1950, which I didn't recommend because I think that it's so good that it supersedes its noir genre in some ways.
Interesting.
So if we want to watch that another time, well, if you want to watch that,
yeah, you definitely. No, I've been wanting to watch that one for a while.
But that's one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, I really want to see it.
But it kind of goes beyond that. And so In a Lonely Place, I think, kind of deals with similar things, but places it firmly in a, I mean, Sunset Boulevard is definitely also a noir picture. Don't be mistaken. That's not what I'm saying. But there's something more to that one that really makes it stand out. As like, even without knowing anything about the genre, you still can really get down with it. And I mean, not to say that you can't, that you know people wouldn't enjoy any of these other ones, but I don't know how to phrase it exactly. But this one falls more within the genre solely.
Okay.
And plays with these ideas of Hollywood and the people that it chews up and spits out in more oblique ways, maybe, and dealing them specifically in the terms of this story, of like one man's story.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I think that's more interesting because it's like, I don't know what the word is, maybe like maybe an analogy, like it's like refracted. The story of Hollywood is like refracted through Dick Steele and the people that he associates with.
Mm-hmm.
And you see kind of its effects maybe in a less direct way that I think is actually super intriguing in this one.
I like really love a lot of the neo-noirs that we've talked about. Like really, like I feel like I probably like a neo-noir better than a like traditional noir on average, but it's so fun to like see like how just, I don't know. It's really fun to be able to kind of trace this line of inspiration and kind of like watch these original, like this source material and like really understand what was pulled from it and what was over-exaggerated to like get to neo-noir. It's just like really fun to see like the timeline of this type of storytelling, I guess, in reverse.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think this one is maybe interesting. Or I'm trying to think of like differences between this and Double Indemnity. Because by the end of it, you lose maybe some of the association with Dick Steele.
Yeah.
And so you don't feel as bad for him as you probably should by the end of the movie, because you're like, well, yeah, you're a violent person. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
And I don't know like if that's necessarily a problem, maybe.
That he's violent?
No. That you lose the association.
I was like, I think it is objectively a problem.
Nah. What else do you expect?
Yeah. He's dynamite.
He's dynamite. He's got to blow up at some point. I think at some point you no longer feel like you're like the identification with him.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly when it switches, but I think because of that, you feel bad like for the situation. You're like, oh, well, that's tough. But I mean, if you start to think about it, you're like, wow, that's actually really tough for this poor guy, because he has this problem that he doesn't want to get helped, and it's causing a rift that he can't mend in his life, that he can't get over because he won't accept it. And so there's more to it, but it's maybe not shown that way, because I think it leans into this idea of like, oh, if we found out this information earlier, then it wouldn't be a problem,
right?
Which I think there's something that's maybe a little bit wrong with that.
I agree. It absolutely would be a problem, even if it was revealed earlier, because that information doesn't change like the violent actions that Laurel herself has witnessed, you know, her own
drive. Yeah.
And he chokes her, you know, like even if it was revealed that, he didn't kill the girl earlier, that still would have come up over something else. Like it just, I don't know. It's important that she learned that information as early on in their relationship as she did. Because that's really, really bad.
And it's specifically because she's trying to leave that this happens, or like without telling him or whatever. And she doesn't tell, she doesn't tell him because she's scared, because she thinks that he might've killed this woman.
Right.
But I think there's a problem if you're afraid to leave the situation and are pressured into a snap marriage.
Yeah.
Which that's another thing that was like very weird to me, is the way that he was just kind of like, I thought he was joking when he was like, I want an answer in 10 seconds and then we'll go.
I know.
I was like, wow, that's like very funny. But then he was serious about it, and that felt a little out of tune, maybe. Because
I really like the like pace at which his toxic characteristics are kind of revealed to you and to Laurel. Because that's so real. It's really, that's exactly how it goes. Like, is that you kind of laugh something off. Like, you think you know this person. You think that they're to be trusted. And then they say something like that, that you like take as a joke. And you realize so suddenly in such an off-putting way that they are not joking. And like more as time goes on, you just kind of get exposed to more and more of these traits so rapidly. Like, it really starts picking up the pace. Like, that just felt very authentic to me.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, that maybe that's the point where we stop identifying with this man.
Yeah.
Because up until then, he's a very cool kind of customer until except these moments where he blows his lid. You know, like the way that he comes in for questioning about the girl who dies.
Yeah.
But then also he sends flowers to her funeral. Like these little like moments of thoughtfulness, like I think are really good for kind of associating with and identifying. But then at a certain point, he just does things that just break with this idea that you have. And then you become scared of him too.
Yeah.
I think I said earlier that I didn't know when that switches, but I think it is that moment where he's like,
yeah,
actually serious about getting married tomorrow. And it's like, wait a second, buddy. So yeah, I'm glad we worked through that, because now I know that that definitely does feel like the spot where it shifts.
I agree.
But I've been trying to read some like film theory type stuff, and I think the association and identification is so interesting, because you're never placed within someone's first person point of view. I mean, sometimes you are, but it's usually not done super well. Just different ways in which you kind of associate with characters and identify with them. I think is super interesting to me.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But it definitely switches from maybe rooting for this romance to being scared for Laurel.
Yeah, totally. And I kind of, at the beginning of the movie, was like, sort of thinking that Laurel was going to be evil. Maybe just because I had just watched Double Indemnity. But I was like, oh, maybe Laurel killed that girl. You know, that'd be kind of fun and crazy.
That would be crazy.
The way that it played out was so much more interesting than that. I'm glad it didn't go down that path.
Yeah. Because it really like touches on a dynamic that you don't see that isn't in other movies also.
Very true. Okay, the more that we've talked about this, the more I like it, I think. Maybe I do like this one as much as Double Indemnity.
Oh, I'm glad. It definitely, both of them definitely like stand out to me as doing things that go above and beyond. You know, if we're looking through the book of short stories, it's the ones that I would...
Totally.
I would bring up and mention.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think this is one of Humphrey Bogart's best performances.
He did do a really good job of making this character like just bizarre to watch, which is exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah. I was born when she loved me. I died when she left me. I lived a few weeks while she knew me. I think it's funny how he says that. And then he's like, I'm going to put it in a scene somewhere. I don't know where though.
It's just that good. Say it back.
But I mean, I think if it wasn't as harped upon, it would work really well. Like, I think the line by itself is quite fun as like a thesis statement to the film, because there's this idea that keeps getting hammered in of like he was not working in a very rough spot, couldn't find any jobs. And then all of a sudden he's back in action. And then I think the threat of losing that is what makes him so grumpy.
Yeah, totally. Definitely does make sense. So. And like you were saying earlier too, it makes sense because he's a writer, you know? I don't know. It makes sense to like say his
Yeah.
Out loud, and especially like his character to kind of like be impressed with himself and have this ego about it type of thing.
It would feel way cheesier if it wasn't in that context.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like, how would you bring it up otherwise? Oh, that's just a thought I had. Don't worry about it. But also repeat it back.
I just think it out loud.
Yeah. And I think as far as like being a writer, Sunset Boulevard also deals with the writer. And it's just this kind of fun way of like being able to put in zingers and have it make sense in the diegesis, like in the movie world.
Yeah, it's clever.
There was a chapter in a textbook I had for a class about killing the writer. Because, and just kind of the depiction of writers in Hollywood movies, because they were like, throughout the studio system, they were kind of mistreated and not given as much credit as they should have been.
Yeah.
And kind of playing on those ideas.
Interesting.
And that was talking about specifically Sunset Boulevard and The Player from Robert Altman from the 91, I think. But just interesting.
That is interesting.
How we have these depictions of screenwriters. And Dick Steele is definitely very unique among that, because he's, because usually the screenwriter isn't as much of like a cool customer, isn't the
interesting
suave leading man material. But so Dick Steele becomes a really interesting character because he's a writer, but his life is as fascinating as his creations, maybe.
I think
usually it's the opposite.
Huh, that is interesting.
Yeah, anything else to say about In a Lonely Place?
I don't think so.
I discovered a lot more, but, and this is what I'm saying, it's the second watch. You know, I my opinion on Double Indemnity was pretty set in stone. And this one, it's been a while. I saw it only the one time, and it's been a little while. So, do you have a rating for this one?
I guess I will give this one a 9 out of 10 as well.
Incredible. It's a 9 out of 10 for me, too. 2 9 out of 10s in one episode.
Hey.
I don't believe it.
Noirvember
is a success.
Woohoo.
Cool. Do you want to just do... So I was thinking if there was like an extra week, I would throw in like some neo-noir type offerings. Mm-hmm. But since it's already almost the end of November, maybe we should just do wrap up next time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cool. I'll have a lot to talk about for this month. I've watched so many movies.
Okay, I gotta catch up.
I'm excited about it. I won't talk about all of them, but
okay.
Yeah, I think wrap.
Really
up
excited to talk about Killers of the Flower Moon. Did you watch that one? This
I
month?
Did. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Cool. Sounds good. And I have a new favorite first watch of this year.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I can't wait to hear about it.
A little sneak preview for next week. Cool. So yeah, that's what we'll do then, and then we'll decide what the rest of December will bring.
Great.
After that, once again, so weird that it's already almost December because it is not cold here.
Oh really?
I wore this sweater. A lot up here. Okay, this sweater is what I wore to school today.
It snowed a lot up here over the week, so it's starting to feel like winter, and I think Adam and I are going to go get our Christmas tree tomorrow.
Oh, nice. A real-life living Christmas tree.
Yes, this will be the first year ever in my entire life having a real-life Christmas tree.
Oh, wow, how fun.
I'm really excited.
Cool. So I think that means all that is left to do for this time around is to recommend an album. Do you have an album to recommend for today?
I'm going to recommend an album called Twilight by BoA. Have you ever listened to this?
Maybe. That sounds familiar, but I'll look it up.
It came out in 2010, and it's another like very Cranberries inspired band and like sound and album, which is just okay. All I listen to right now. I don't know why. That's just my favorite thing to listen to. I think a couple weeks ago I recommended an album by The Sundays. I also said The Sundays are very cranberry, like Mazzy Star inspired.
Cranberry coded.
Yes, they're very cranberry coated. Mm. And that's just what I'm really into right now. If anybody has any more recommendations of like girl rock bands that sound like the Cranberries, put them in the mailbox. This is all I want to listen to.
Yeah. I think I might have some options for you.
Yay. Okay. I'd love to hear them.
But yeah, I have like a couple of songs saved from this album. I don't know which ones. I'll look it up. But like the album looks, cover looks familiar. So I know I've heard something from here. Probably on like Discover Weekly over the years or whatever.
I'm a big fan. And it sounds, the vibe of it, the sound sounds older than 2010. It's kind of surprising to me that they captured that sound in that year. And they only had like two albums. This one and one like 5 years before, I think. They're interesting.
Very cool. Let's see. Before I get into my album, I wanted to say that whenever I recommended the Wise Blood album from Front Row Seat to Earth, Front Row Seat to Earth. I don't know why that was so hard to say. I said everything from then on is great. And I agree with that. But also there's an EP that I was thinking of that actually came out before that album. I was thinking it was after, but I think it's called Cardamom Times, a 4-song EP that is also really good, but came out before that album. The art cover is like the cover art is similar. So I was thinking it was after, but alas, no. So my album for this week is by The Garden, called Mirror Might Steal Your Charm, I believe. This is the first Garden album I've ever heard. Not quite when it came out, but between when it came out and when anything else came out. And I've been listening to this one. I'm preparing for season 10 of The Daily. So I've been listening to more and different stuff and specifically focusing on different stuff. So stay tuned for a good season 10. I'm going to really try to mix it up and put a lot of stuff that you've never heard before.
Love it.
This doesn't necessarily fall into that, but I've also been listening to this as part of my season 10 prep, and it's a good one. And I think that it's worth listening to for one and all, for the public, el gente. So yeah, that's my album. please send in the mailbag recommendations for girl rock groups that sound like the Cranberries.
Yes, please.
And also your favorite film noir, however you think you can classify it. It can be whatever.
Yes. I'm dying to know.
We'll be back for November wrap up, where I know I'll have some more noirs to talk about among lots of other things. And we'll see you then.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.
Yeah. So thanks for listening to this one. Do great things this week. We both believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.